Get a great deal on the durable Kubota L-Series tractor. Built upon a solid foundation of cast iron and steel, the Kubota L-Series tractor is the number one selling compact tractor in the U.S. for over 10 years. Get the L2501 HST for payments as low as $149 a month now through June 30th. See us or go to KubotaUSA.com for full disclaimer.
Visit Parrish Tractor on the web at ParrishTractor.com.
Welcome to Bigfoot
and the Bunny.
This is a couple's journey into the mysterious,
the unknown,
and the paranormal. I'm your host, Chris Carr.
And I'm your host, Kristen Johnson.
Together we are Bigfoot and the Bunny.
You're in.
Welcome to Bigfoot and the Bunny. I'm Chris Carr.
And Kristen Johnson.
How are you guys this week on this Tuesday, the 14th of July?
Well, Christopher, you moved and you are now a what again?
I'm a Rhode Islander. from Boston, and I could park my car in Worcester, but now I'm a Rhode Islander. So it's somewhere, that accent I think lives somewhere between that Boston accent and Brooklyn. I'm not too sure, but I'm definitely a Rhode Islander. I started off here, so I kind of moved away and I've come back, and I'm in the Lincoln now, and I've been moving. It's been a real pain in the ass, as moves are. I got a lot of things in boxes, and I'll be packing and unpacking for a few days here.
But yes, tell everybody the good news. What do we have?
We have a special announcement. We have even more Bigfoot and a Bunny for you. Starting this Saturday, we're going to start a live stream that you can catch on Facebook, most likely. I think that's where we're going to go. But the way to find out what exactly we're doing is to go on Bigfoot and a Bunny on Facebook. Search for Bigfoot and a Bunny or Dark Horse Paranormal. And you'll get all your updates there. But we have Nathaniel Gillis joining us to kick that off. And some fun Saturday night. Little weekend paranormal too.
So I was talking about, we have a studio. That's what I was telling you to say. We're building a studio
to accommodate this. It's all part of moving, and it's also a pain in the ass. But it's coming along, and we're going to try to wing something together Saturday with Nathaniel. And once again, if you can search for Bigfoot and the Bunny on Facebook, give us a little like there, and you'll be able to watch that and check it out. So that is what's coming. It'll be some kind of studio attached. This little tapestry behind me is part of it, but we're not really moved into studio. Yet, so to speak. But we're going to wing it. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I do want to tell the folks out there, listeners, the regular listeners, that know we go to our quote-unquote undisclosed location quite a bit over there in Central Mass, and I won't say anything about particular gates that it's named after or whatever, but we have a long-running story with that, and we have made a couple of trips in the last month and the last few weeks. And they were kind of interesting, right, Chris?
They were. We have this child spirit, Toby. If you look back on our archives here on UPRN Talk Radio, you can see and hear our EVPs with our child spirit, Toby. And when we went the second to the last time, I took him out. We removed him from the undisclosed.
We certainly tried, right? Like, we're kind of new at spirit removal services, right? Yeah. But we gave this a shot. And, Toby has been there each time we've gone. We've been able to capture some kind of audio of Toby. Answering those same questions, like, how old are you? You know, and he would say seven repeatedly each time we'd go. And Kristen did a lot of work on that. And we opened those gates and we tried to walk him through. And then we got home and we listened to our recordings, and they really had all sorts of whispery, like EVPs through them and all kinds of weird data.
Crazy, so many
energy
EVPs.
Stuff going on that was really cool. And we'll be putting something together to play some of that for you guys. And then we went back again. And the weird thing is, mm-hmm. we went back again, and what?
Well, you have a Frank spirit that is kind of attached to you. He's more, not an attachment, but he's more inclined to speak to you. And you removed him this time.
Well, I attempted to, but there was very little energy. It was more or less where I was going with that. Is it just seemed kind of dead? Like there was dead.
No pun intended.
It did not feel like there was much going on at all. So
it
I don't
was,
know if I was successful on that, or if he left Sophie, or what might have happened. I mean, it feels like things work. We don't know. It's a mystery. But
we went back home and we listened to the EVPs as we were walking down the path after we closed the gate, and one of the EVPs said, "I'm free."
We did have an EVP of that. So again, we're going to put that stuff together for a future episode, but we've got a great guest for you guys tonight, and we want to get on with it because I know we're running a few minutes late, and we're really excited about Christy. You want to start that?
Yes, do. We have Kent Acosta with us tonight. Hi, Ken. Welcome to our show.
Hi, how are you folks doing this evening?
We're doing good. We're doing good. We had a bio there for you as well. We were going to read off
right now.
Oh, in the interest of time. Hey, it's Tuesday night. I figured I'd come and spend some time with some friends. So please go right ahead.
Right on. Appreciate it.
Ken has been researching and investigating unusual phenomena in the forms of ghosts and hauntings, UFOs, and cryptids for 45 years. He takes an objective, unbiased approach to exploration and discovery, always seeking the most rational conclusion before declaring any phenomena to be paranormal in nature. In 2007, he founded the Rise Up Paranormal Society, which now includes affiliates in 5 of the 6 New England states. Ken also chairs Rise Up annual Ocean State Paracon, which has raised over $40,000 for local charitable organizations. All be told, charitable endeavors of Rise Up have raised over $250,000, for charities and nonprofits since 2008. He is also the co-host of the YouTube show Dead Air Paranormal on the Paranormal Channel. That's a really great show. Chris and I listen to that a lot. So welcome, sir.
Well, thank
welcome
you.
To the
that
show.
I got an introduction. I got to live up to that now. Oh, my God. The 45 years part, I get like shivers every time that I talk about that. I know it's hard to believe, but, you know.
You've been since you were, what, 2, 3?
You were born a ghost.
Oh, no, I wish it was, you know. I don't like that time machine. I'm working on that, you know, at this point. The way back machine. That shows us Sherman and Peabody. Nobody knows what we're talking about.
Yes,
Sherman
it is.
Peabody.
I literally watched that animated show last night, that movie. So
I know. You know, yeah. I tell people all the time, if I'm doing a talk, hold on to your seats, because when I was doing this and I started out, I was like 18, maybe. I mean, actually talking to people and going places, you know, and no internet, no cell phones, no social media. I mean, it was like medieval times back then, you know, it really was.
<Don't forget.
laughs> Like people just look at me and just like at a certain age, they just no social media, no Facebook to boast about how badass we were or anything like that. I think we did more back then to scare ourselves, to be honest with you.
Well, actually, speaking of that kind of leads us right to our first question for you. What was that inspiration that got you started when you were 18 or however old you were? Did you grow up in a haunted house? Did you have some kind of unusual event that happened to you? What drove you to getting involved with the paranormal?
I know everybody's got an origin story of some type. Mine, I remember like being 8 or 9 years old. There was a cousin of mine went into the Army. He lived next door. And he had these magazines, like they were called Fortune and True magazines. And it talked like a lot about UFOs, these, you know, pictures of these things. And I was always into like astronauts and space program when I was just a little kid, back when those things, they were our real heroes back then. And then this other thing came along with these UFOs, whatever these were, that nobody could explain. So as a child, before the age of 10, I was looking at these things and reading about these things. And then the next thing, I guess, the natural progression was Bigfoot, Loch Ness Monster, all the rest of that stuff. The funny part about it is I wanted nothing to do with ghosts and hauntings and things like that. No, thank you. You know, nothing right. to do with that stuff. Then as you get a little older, it just sort of all kind of appealed to me a little bit. But I mean, I had an experience when I was about 12 or 13 years old that was pretty profound. But to me, it was always just like I wanted to do more than read about it. I wanted to see these places and talk to these people who had these types of experiences and sort of get out into the world and see for myself what was going on. So that's always been the attraction for me. And then, you know, as you get a little older and you have a little more means to do so, then it just led to more stuff, because there wasn't a lot of people back then that were going to tell their story to some 18-year-old kid knocking on their doors. So we did the typical things in old buildings and stuff like that until we came to the point that we took people seriously, and I guess they took us a little bit more seriously.
That's great. Especially at 18 years old, you know?
Yeah.
Right. I mean, what was the just profound experience at 11? What had happened to you?
I came home from school one day, and like most days, my parents worked back then, so kind of a latchkey type kid. So I'm in, sixth grade at the time. So my thing was to get home, put my books away, feed the dog, and wait for my parents to come home. So I did that day, and I'm out in the driveway, and I'm feeding the dog, and I'm petting the dog as I'm feeding him. And my uncle Fred drives by in this big old boat of a Buick with the air vents on the hood and, you know, 60s style
nice.
Battleship Buick. And, you know, he's doing the cruising thing. He's got his elbow on the window, waves at me. I wave back to him. He was only lived one street over. It didn't, you know, faze me in the least, and kept doing what I'm doing. A little while later, my mom got home, and she was visibly upset. I didn't say anything. I was just happy that it wasn't me that set her off this time. I didn't do anything.
Right.
So she went into the house. I stayed outside because as a kid, I'm a little like something's not right. My dad gets home a little while after that, asked me if I fed the dog. I told him I had. He went in the house, and about 10 minutes later, he comes outside and says, Mama and I are going to my Aunt Mary's house, my Aunt Alice's house, I beg your pardon, because my Uncle Freddie had passed away that morning.
Wow.
Oh, my goodness.
Now, I had just seen him 45 minutes, and I say this in a funny way, but my Uncle Fred had a very distinct look, sort of a cross between, like, Kramer and Fred Flintstone. You know, I say that jokingly, but lovingly at the same time. I mean, there was no mistaking him. And I have a picture here of me with him in front of that car when I was a little kid. I didn't say anything to my parents because that was back in the days that I'd probably get popped side the head for saying anything like that. But I had the good sense not to in that particular time. share that information with them. And I kind of sat on that for a very, very long time. And it was only maybe 10 years into my marriage that when I was into this stuff that I had that conversation with my wife and said, I got to tell you a story. But I don't think that's what kind of set me on my way, because, you know, I was always heading in that direction anyway, in between baseball and basketball games. I mean, I was a big jock growing up, but, you know, some people played cards. I chased after ghosts and things like that. But,
sure. It must have left a little question mark in your mind, like, what did I see? Did that happen? And how did that happen?
Yeah, I mean, how can it not? And the thing is, it opened up so many questions. None the least of which is, okay, my Uncle Fred, as I came to understand it, but the car? Why the car?
Maybe that's right. How.
And this is in broad daylight. I mean, this is 2:30, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. But as a little kid, you know, after that, I got to tell you, for the longest time, I was just terrified because I'm like, you know, is he going to come back? You know, why me? You know, but eventually, you know, nothing else happened beyond that. But that was sort of like, I guess, my come to Jesus moment in terms of the paranormal. And I tended to give eyewitness testimony a little bit more credibility from that point on, because after so many years, you can tell when somebody's kind of yanking your chain or their story doesn't make sense. But for the most part, I try to be compassionate about those things, because I had one of my own that's kind of hard to believe sometimes.
Right. Well, that is kind of the thing with it is, you know, we can talk about it, but till something happens to you that you really, under no circumstance, can really explain, and right. You just go, wow. And, you know, it does shake you a little bit. And to have that as a child and be a family member.
And nobody will probably believe you if you told them. Profound. So
right. I mean, exactly. That would be the last thing I'd want to bring up in everybody's grief, is to say, hey, this happened. But, you know, I think what made it probably worse, you know, it's not the 30-year-old Ken DaCosta or the 40-year-old Ken DaCosta. This was like the 12 or 13-year-old Ken DaCosta. You know what I mean? And these things, it's not like there's a bunch of shows on TV and all this stuff is happening back then. Because it really wasn't. Weren't thinking a lot about that stuff. And then you have this thing. And for a child, really, I'm just a kid at the time. You know, very, very tough thing to reconcile and to process in your own head. Mm-hmm. And that's probably why I repressed it for as long as I did, because I didn't even want to talk about it until I became an adult.
Did you ever tell your parents at all about it?
Never. If any of the older members of my family should be listening to this show, it's the first time they've heard it too.
Wow.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing it with us.
Thank you. That
is a good story. Very interesting.
Well, I like to let people know that it's okay to share those kind of stories. And sometimes, you know, what I found is, you know, all you really need sometimes is just someone to listen. You know, not necessarily maybe even act on it right away, but just to listen to you and try to help you with some closure and comprehend exactly what it is that you experienced.
Yeah, not judge, you know.
Sure.
Yeah.
Wow. I actually can, I know what you're talking about, because I kind of had an experience myself. So you founded Rise Up Paranormal, also known as the Rhode Island Society for the Examination of Unusual Phenomena, back in 2007.
Rise Up fits better on a t-shirt.
And are, without a doubt, considered one of the most professional and reliable paranormal teams in New England. What made you put that together? And what would be some of the more well-known cases you have worked on?
Well, wow, that's a lot to unpack. I guess what happened was I had a son. My youngest son had an interest in this as well. And at the time, he was going to college, and I was kind of a lone wolf back then. Every once in a while, I might drag a friend of mine kicking and screaming on one of my adventures. But I was doing this for the most part by myself. And when my son got into it, he met some kids at college that were also into this, and they would come over Friday nights, drink my beer, pass out on our couches, and we would watch a couple of the paranormal shows and, you know, just sort of like do a Mystery Science Theater type thing where, you know, we'd tear them apart and we'd, you know, have a lot of fun with it. Yeah.
I do the same thing with the mystery. Yeah. Theater 3000. We're so bad.
I know it. But we used to have these discussions and sometimes they get a little deep as far as, you know, what is it that we're looking for? What is it that we seek? What happens to us? And at that time, because I was motivated because I had a son involved and that appealed to me. So we decided to actually pool all our resources, get together. We added another young man who I'd known. I grew up with his dad. And I found out he had an interest in it, too. And at the time, he was in college with a major in preservation archaeology. So he had a background in this type of stuff as well. And from that point, we just decided to go out because that was kind of more accepted around about that time and let people know that we were willing to go and to talk to them and to document and help them try to figure these kind of things out. So that was the beginnings of Rise Up. And from that point on, we've, you know, added 13 people and different people in different states. Just trying to reach as many people as we can that had the same approach we did as documentarians. And, you know, we're not believers. We're not skeptics. We like to go into things unbiased and just try to put ourselves in the position that people are when they have these experiences and see if we can't prove them out or disprove them, but just be as honest as possible. Now, what was the second part of that question? Oh, so cases. Oh, boy. One of the my favorite ones, I guess, is when we had access to one of the mansions in Newport, Rhode Island for an entire year. That was Belcourt Castle. So I think we did something like 30 plus investigations there and eventually opened that up to the public and allowed them to come in with us. That was one of my favorite places. Some of the most profound cases we've had, probably some of the ones I can't talk about because of privacy concerns, you know, residences, things like that.
Absolutely.
But we've done a military base. We've done battleships. We have done theaters. One of my favorite, the Warner Theater, Torrington, Connecticut. Absolutely drop dead gorgeous Art Deco from the 1930s type place. Schools, you know, the usual asylums and penitentiaries and things like that. But the thing I'm proudest about is that occasionally we've gotten together and taken some road trips, whether that's to Eastern State, Rolling Hills, some of the, you know, typical places that we have access to. But for the most part, we've been asked to come in and to investigate some of these places. And I'll tell you, I mean, I take that kind of trust in us very, very seriously. And, you know, I respect people for doing that, and you know, we enjoy being able to do those things. But yeah, the military base stands out to me because that was just different, you know, security clearance, the whole thing. That was crazy. The Newport Mansion, the Payne House Museum in Coventry that you're aware of. We've been there for 9 years. I mean, one of our favorite places. We've sort of, you know, put that on hold, like we have many, many places at this point, because of what we're all dealing with right now and trying to, you know, use a little common sense. But, you know, every place is different. And, you know, we've had some wonderful opportunities that places that normally they wouldn't let a guy like me in a Newport mansion. Are you kidding me? You know, and then they give you the key and tell you to lock up. Who knew, right?
Wow.
That's amazing. I wish I could have gone to that when you were hosting it. I do remember that.
Yeah, we miss it.
Did you, I know you're good friends with Andrea Perron. for our listeners that don't know, is the real life daughter of the family that was portrayed in the movie The Conjuring. Were you an early investigator of the farmhouse in Harrisville? Did you go in there?
I wasn't an early investigator. No, I mean, we just recently had Carl Johnson on our show, and Carl and Keith were actually the first investigators there.
They
called in the Warrens, and we found out a lot about that from the Johnsons and from Andrea that it didn't have the storybook ending that the movie did, where they walked off into the sunset. Roger Perrin essentially kicked their butts out of there after a while. So, I mean, there's a whole story to that, too.
For some reason, I thought you were. I'm sorry. I apologize then. I knew Carl was and Keith, and I know the story with the Warrens and all that. For some reason, I thought you were involved, too, to some degree.
Well, actually, we were, because up until the sale recently, we were the last group to investigate the house. Okay. So that may be where that comes from. And I think that was 2009. And to my knowledge, up until that point, I don't think we were the only ones that ever got something evidential out of the place. But I think for the longest time, we were some of the only ones, if not the only one, who had documented evidence from the place, who actually saved it and had it in the archives. And then, of course, you know, at that point, I didn't know who Andrew Perrin was. I didn't know who the Perrins were. I didn't know about their story. I knew about nothing to do with that house in terms of what happened in 1970 over a 10-year period. And, you know, looking back on it, I think that wasn't a bad thing, because I was not predisposed. None of us had any suggestion or expectations. We just did an investigation and pulled out a couple of, you know, great pieces of evidence, audio evidence, had some experiences, nothing of the nature that Andrea and her family had, or what other people say has gone on there. But, for the longest time, for 10 years, actually, till Corey and Jen Heinsohn purchased the place, we were the last group allowed in there. So, it's another one of those places I was very honored and very thankful to be able to go in and spend some time there.
That's awesome. And speaking of audio evidence, we've got some EVPs that you sent us graciously enough, and we much appreciate. The first one I wanted to play is from the King House, and it's a scream. And this is really something. And maybe it gave us a little background, and then we'll play it.
Yeah, we were up on a third floor, another Newport mansion. And this is not an EVP so much as a disembodied voice. And there were three of us, three males up there. And we were just asking, like we do a lot of times, do you need any help? You know, is there something we can do to help you? Or so that's how we start out at the three of us up there. And then when we ask if they need any help, we get a very firm reply.
Joe, can you play that for us, please? King House.
Can you see us in this room right now? Can you see the both of us? Is there something that we can do for you?
I'm going to let it looped about two times.
What was that? That was strange. Dave, was that you? Hold on.
All right.
Can you see us in this room right now?
Not sure if
can
it's all set or not.
Oh,
still gone.
Is there something that we can do for you? What was that? That was strange.
You back, and that was creepy.
Right.
That is creepy. That is an amazing scream. I love that.
I couldn't hear it on my end, so.
No, we it's mic'd down, but the listeners can hear it.
Okay, good. Listeners, as long as they can hear it, I've heard it enough. Yeah, there was obviously something in the middle of the room out of nowhere just screamed out no.
Right now.
And we were checking with each other, and I guess the video or the audio doesn't do justice to our faces at the time. We were just looking at each other, like, you know, with open mouth look. But
right.
Yeah, it was another. It was a heck of an experience.
I like your approach to, you know, when you're trying to get EVPs and you're on an investigation. I've, you know, been on a couple of that you've hosted, and I've watched Paranormal Truth, which we like, we're fans of. We're going to ask you about that a little bit. But you have a very talkative way of, you know, down-to-earth way of talking to spirits or trying to get an EVP, get a response. You don't use any kind of provocation, obviously. And you have a relaxed way of just like it's just anybody that's just hanging out there.
Conversation. I mean, you're trying to stimulate a conversation, and that's sort of an approach that I adopted, you know, a long time ago. So, you know, it's just everybody has their own thing. I just try to remember that at one point, not everybody's an evil sea captain. A lot of these people are, you know, just normal people like us, and just let them know that we're interested in hearing their message.
Speaking of the Paranormal Truth, I remember seeing an episode with the light up cat toy, which is this plastic cat toy. They're very affordable. They have LEDs in them, and they have motion sensors. And I was so intrigued. I was like, oh, look at this, you know, an actual affordable ghost hunting, and I hate that term, tool that's out there. And, you know, it's so simple, but it was very effective in the particular episode I watched. I immediately went out and got one on Amazon right away. Are there any tools, both inexpensive and maybe, you know, marked up to, you know, those ghost detecting figures that you would recommend or not recommend to, say, the budding paranormal researcher out there?
The first thing I would do is read some reviews on these things, and don't go out and buy them, because it's a lot of it's the same motherboard, same wiring. It's just a different package. But one of the things that I would suggest to everybody off the top of my head is a lot of times you can go out and invest in a $4 black light. Just like we used to use back in the day with all our posters that would light up neon and everything. If you find a, find a screw-in light bulb and just replace it with a black light, turn it on, you can save yourself hundreds and hundreds of dollars on IR illuminators, because they will light up a room 360 degrees for your infrared cameras, as well as any IR attachments. And I especially say that now because they're not really making night shot cameras anymore, camcorders. They're very, very difficult to get. And if you get one, they're usually secondhand, and who knows how long they're going to last. But these little hacks like that, a lot of times you'll save yourself hundreds of dollars, and your results are just as good. So that's one that immediately comes to mind.
That's a great tip. Yeah, those things can be expensive, certainly.
No doubt.
LEDs, yeah, a lot of money.
No doubt.
Chris? I'm not sure if we lost Chris. I'll move on. How did the... if you could, maybe tell us a little bit more about the Paranormal Truth, because there's quite a few episodes out there on YouTube, and they are good. And is that going to be a show? It was on TV, or was it... I remember reading something on Facebook about this a long time ago. And
Yeah, I mean, we had signed a couple of development deals with Discovery that I can tell you about now because they've expired. But we've kind of lost, we've been through those hoops where, you know, they have certain expectations. We have certain expectations. Paranormal Truth was our answer to it, because I just think that everybody's ready to watch a real investigation. And I mean, we've got some personality. We try to be funny, and we try to take everybody on that trip with us, but do it in a way that there's no safety net. You know, if we mess up, you get to see it. If we do well, you get to see it. So I didn't want to do one. And then about 5 years ago, a guy named Dan Gwinden, who's the general manager of a public access station in Marlboro said, hey, do you want to get together and do these kind of things? So we did. Long story short, there's maybe 13 different episodes that are out there right now where we kind of go all over New England and, you know, you can come along with us and meet some of the folks. Some of them actually may be very familiar to you if you go back in the archives, because a lot of these people spend a lot of time on Ghost Hunters, Ghost Nation, Ghost Hunters International. So see, they moved on to greatness, you know. I'm still plugging away in my office there.
Well, but, you are the guy that knows things. I always describe you as the guy that you go up to and you ask, you go, hey Ken, how's the weather? And then, you know, 5 minutes later you come back with some body of knowledge about the paranormal you had never thought of before. And I love that about you, and it is awesome, and it's true. I always learn from you whenever we've talked. Speaking of the weather, actually, that brings up another point. You and his investigations, you do mark down things like weather and moon cycles and what's going on with barometric pressure and all those things, and you log a lot of details, which are, you know, a lot of researchers do. Have you found any kind of trend in those sort of weather-related details that seems to relate to paranormal activity in general?
Well, the one thing I can probably pull out of it, because it's a work in progress, and I mean, we've been privileged enough to go to hundreds and hundreds of places, and we're always looking at different angles like that. But environmentally, I think we're more interested in how the environment affects us as human beings, our own physiology, you know, when it's stormy, when it's warm, barometric pressure, humidity, things like that, and how it affects us. For example, we do know that if there is a significant temperature difference between the floor and a ceiling of a specific room, people are more apt and more likely to report that they felt like they've been touched. Yeah.
So something, you think those, you know, factors affect people and maybe their ability to communicate with spirits, maybe meaning that it's on the people and not so much the spirits activity, but maybe a way of us being able to interpret what they do or reach out to them?
Yeah, I think that it goes, the door swings both ways, because we're also prone to false positives sometimes because of our own physiology, the way our body feels, the way our body reacts to cold, heat, etc., and so forth. You know, we've done some experiments where we have told people exactly what's going on in a location, and we've told people nothing about what's going on in the location. Put them in the same rooms and see, you know, how much suggestion plays in those kind of things. That's more of a psychological type of experiment. But if you look at moon phases, for example, the one thing we do know is moon affects us. It affects us psychologically, et cetera, and so forth. So, you know, moon phases, things like that, it all comes into play. There's not a lot of correlations that I can draw to these things. When people say that it's a stormy night and the ionosphere is charged and spirits are more, you know, apt to show themselves, I don't see any empirical data that supports that. There's a lot of anecdotal data when people say, yeah, it was a dark and stormy night and we had all sorts of things happen. I don't think there's any more chance of that if it was a clear and pleasant night, or whether if you're investigating at night or during the day, which I think is, we all know that's kind of overrated. There are benefits for investigating at night, but for the most part, you know, most sightings that people have occurred during the day, actually. So, you know, when they're just going about their lives, you know, not ghost hunting or anything like that. So it's imperative to put ourselves in that same position to see if time of day and who's present and all the rest of that type of thing has some correlation for what's going on in a particular location.
Sure. Chris and I do a lot of day investigating. Yeah. And, it's not like the go sleep all day and get up and party all night. It's not how that works.
You know? No, we all wish, right?
Now, you've you guys can hear me now, right?
Yes.
Yes, we can.
All right. We have an EVP from the Pain House, but you've investigated that. I know Chris has had the pleasure to investigate that with you in Coventry, Rhode Island. Mm-hmm. Right, Chris?
Yes, I've been to Pain House a couple of times.
Yeah.
It's quite the place.
Do you think maybe after all this is done that you were going to continue to host events there or when it's safe to?
Yeah, more than likely. We were doing them at Smith's Castle in Wickford, Rhode Island, too, but it just became a little bit too much to do all these things and tend to group business. But we're going to stay with Pain House. We're just taking a little break, and the plan is to kind of revisit it in the fall, see where we are as a region, as a country, most importantly, as a state. The short answer is definitely we want to get back to that because we've had so much fun with people there, and they've been so welcoming to us. It's, you know how it is. You get places, they sort of become a home away from home.
Sure, you've been there quite a while. Do you want to tell our audience a little bit about the Pain House, and especially Sarah? I know we've got a great EVP to play coming up right after that.
Yeah, the Pain House at one point was the hub of activity in the town of Coventry, Rhode Island. It was a stagecoach stop at one point between Boston and Hartford, Connecticut. It was pretty much the halfway point. And one of the sons of the one of the owners, Francis Brayton, had a business idea because they were blacksmiths by trade, where they could stable the horses, shoe them, feed them overnight, feed their guests, give them a bed, because it was, Boston to Hartford back then, it was a pretty grueling trip. So it became an inn, a tavern. It changed hands a few times, remained an inn and a tavern. At one point, it was owned by Lieutenant Governor of the state of Rhode Island, Thomas Whipple. And it was a courthouse. It was a meeting place. It was a schoolhouse. It was a hospital of sorts where a doctor would come through town. And usually they would stop at pubs because with alcohol on hand, it was for antiseptic properties as well as anesthetic properties. You know, you drink enough whiskey and you're not going to feel a thing, right?
Right.
And that was usually the case with these places in the 1700s, 1800s.
That's what they had, yeah.
But until the town built up and hospitals and schoolhouses and everything was built, it really was the center of everything that went on in town, and quite a remarkable history.
And there's a little girl associated with the place, Sarah.
Yeah, Sarah is a name that's been assigned to a child spirit that's there. And after 9 years, it's come to the point where she interacts with us on a fairly regular basis as these things go when we investigate, because it's not, they don't happen just because we ask nicely. But it's gotten to the point where we recognize her voice. Interestingly enough, Sarah may not actually be the actual name, because we've done more research on that. We think it may be a young girl named Louise, actually. But Sarah was the name that many years before we went there, a spirit medium had given this child. And it just sort of stuck. And when we would call the name, the child would respond to us. So we stayed with it, you know. For lack of anything better, we found out all this new information before we came back this year. Then, of course, the virus hit, and we've never had a chance really to go into the place and use that name and try a different approach to maybe see if we could elicit even more of a response by using a proper name. So we're excited about that. And we get an opportunity to do that. We're looking forward to it.
That's excellent. That's excellent. Right. I'd love to get into the theory of roles with you sometime, and how spirits seem to sometimes step up to these roles, like they almost take a name. It may not be their name, but they fulfill that role. That, you know, it seems to happen. I've had other people tell us that, and other guests we've had on, and I think there may be some truth to it. Sure. We have a nice EVP here, ABCs, which I believe is the Sarah voice.
Right.
And we'll play that for you guys. Joe, do you want to play that for us? ABCs?
And I say C, and you say D. And I say C.
Sorry, guys, I like to loop them three or four times.
That's fine.
And I say C, and you say
D. Okay, you're back.
Thank you. That was awesome. That's Sarah.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Chris, because we're getting a little late on time here.
Yep. I hope that all played through. And if you have tried Sarah actually finishing it, saying the letter D.
We were kind of looking to, at that point, it's a few years back, we were testing the awareness of us. You know, I know this is probably rare. A lot of guests don't do this, but there is one particular EVP. I'm not sure if you've heard it before. It's the one that's labeled Merci Beaucoup.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. We
wanted to do that as our finale.
Yeah, we're at a mill in one socket, Rhode Island. Anybody knows Rhode Island? Welcome to Rhode Island, by the way, Chris. Knows that French Canadians founded the place, built the place, inhabited the place, worked the mills. So the question everybody asks is, why would you go to Greece, speak English, and expect, you know, English spoken back to you? It's a fair point. So what I decided to do that night is ask all the questions in French that we had. Who are you? My name is Ken. It's nice to be here. Can you, you know, so boned up on a little sophomore year French, asked the questions, absolutely nothing happened. And at the end of the night, like we or anybody usually does, we said, well, if you've tried to respond to us, we thank you, because we hadn't reviewed anything yet. So my voice will be saying, and if you have tried to talk to us, thank you, merci beaucoup, and I think you'll clearly hear the response we got back.
Okay, I'm gonna let that rip, Joe.
And if you have tried to talk to us, thank you. Merci. Merci beaucoup. And if you have tried to talk to us, thank you. Merci. Merci beaucoup.
I'm sorry, that's weird sounded. Y'all back. I let it play like four times.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, that is awesome.
And it parrots. Well, we call it parroting.
Right.
So it repeats you.
It repeats you, but it repeats you in French.
Yeah. Right. We had somebody who had microphone 3 feet away from us, got nothing. The guy sitting next to me was Joe Chin. At the time, we all know Joe. He got nothing on his recorder. The following day, we split up all the recordings, and I did some, he did some. And this was actually only on my recorder, but I had sent him the file, and the next day he emailed me, said, you're not going to believe what we got. And I'm figuring, okay, we got a whisper or, you know, something. When I heard this, it's one of those where, you know, the headphones go flying off your head and, you know, you're going around fist pumping and things like that. So
yeah,
Yeah, I thought that was pretty remarkable. That was a good lucky catch, is what you call that.
That's definitely an amazing catch, and I love that. And it's so clear. It's right there. Yeah. So you're on Friday nights on Dead Air Resurrected, and you want to tell us a little bit about that? I know you're a co-host, and you guys have great guests like Jason Hawes and the aforementioned Carl Johnson, I think, was just on. We like Carl. We've had him on here, and you want to tell us a little bit about that?
What you guys do and
have in store for everyone?
Yeah, the show, we were actually on about 3 years ago on radio, on Blog Talk Radio. And we took about a three-year break. With everything that's going on now, we just said, hey, we're sitting around the house. Let's give this another go. But this time, I always joke we had faces made for radio. But we decided to go ahead anyway and put ourselves on YouTube. And, because everybody's available, and I think that there was a little bit of a void for people who were into the paranormal, not a lot on TV to watch, we gave it a go. And since March, I think we've got 8,000 subscribers and a couple of million views. And
wow.
Yeah, no, awesome. I mean, it was like we didn't predict anything like that. So we try to have a little bit of fun. We try to break up the paranormal with some normal stuff with our guests. So, we're on Friday nights from 9 to 11. And, of course, on YouTube, you can see the replays. We simulcast on our Facebook page and on the Dark Zone Network. So just trying to reach as many people as we can. We always like to hear from everyone. And, give us a look, and you'll see that, maybe we're a little bit different because, I co-host this thing with George Lopez, who's down in West Palm, Florida, and Mike Bowler in Fort Worth, Texas. So it's interesting that we've got different perspectives around the country.
And you guys are funny.
It is. I was just going to say, Chris and I watch it.
We try.
And we do. We love the kind of breaks you take that are like little commercial breaks or something.
Yeah.
There's a lot going on. There's some great production. And
we try to have a little awesome bit of guests. Fun with it, because I think sometimes, at the risk of taking ourselves too seriously sometimes in this, we got to remember that, there's more to people. Our guests, I think, appreciate it too, when we get to kind of goof around with them a little bit.
Sure. Have a few laughs. So where else can people find you? So you got Dead Air on, you should search YouTube for that, Dead Air Paranormal or the Paranormal Channel. Dead Air Resurrected.
Dead Air Resurrected. Right.
Yep. And,
so we created our own channel. It's called the Paranormal Channel.
Okay.
On YouTube. And we're going to be branching out, I think, in some other things, maybe bringing in the future more people on, maybe some live investigations, some different things. So we're trying to walk before we can run, and make sure we know what we're doing first, before we branch out too much. But that's where we are right now. And, we're still a paranormal group. And, you can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Twitter and our website, riseupparanormal.com. So, there's a lot of good stuff on there, some information. And if you ever want to get a hold of us, use the contact page. We're always there for you.
Right on. Well, we thank you for coming on tonight, Ken. We very much appreciate it. And thank you for letting us play those EVPs. I was looking forward to that. And I enjoy talking to you.
All right. Folks, thank you so much for having me. The pleasure's been all mine. I really appreciate it. And I like spending time with you guys. So all the best of you going forward. Everybody, stay safe. Stay healthy.
Thank you. Excellent. You too.
Thank you so much.
You bet.
So as said, this Saturday we'll be starting a new live stream, Bigfoot and the Bunny Pirate Radio, and you can catch Nathaniel J. Gillis on with us. And who do we have next week, Chris? Boy, I ask this question every week because I draw a blank.
Of course, I don't have it right in front of me.
I know who we got. I looked at my Magic 8 Ball. I just shook it up, and it's Jill Shelley of the Boyd House will be coming on.
Yes.
And yes, going to tell us how she went from paranormal investigator to hosting her own haunted location. So that should be good. It'll be good fun. Looking forward to that.
Yes, we are.
And
thank you again. This is Bigfoot and the Bunny. And thank Ken DaCosta again as well for being on. And we'll see you guys next week.
Great. Yep, thanks, everybody. Thanks.
Episode of Bigfoot
and the Bunny.
We'd like to thank Joe Montaldo for his engineering and support.
Thank you, Joe.
Be sure to look for us on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and Twitter.
You can also find us at Dark Horse Paranormal and Purple Raven Paranormal by searching those very same outlets. You can email us at bigfootandthebunny@gmail.com. Thank you.
Catch you later.
Bye.
Get a great deal on the durable Kubota L-Series tractor. Built upon a solid foundation of cast iron and steel, the Kubota L-Series tractor is the number one selling compact tractor in the U.S. for over 10 years. Get the L2501 HST for payments as low as $149 a month now through June 30th. See us or go to KubotaUSA.com for full disclaimer.
Visit Parrish Tractor on the web at ParrishTractor.com.